This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Mary Kissel, she is the executive vice president of Stevens Incorporated. Most importantly, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State, traveling in Europe, traveling in Asia. And I call upon Mary to help me understand decisions being made in Europe right now at Davos, Switzerland, by executives from major corporations, by leaders of the European Union, of NATO, and by helpful hands about the immediate future and Russia. The engagement of combat in eastern Ukraine is not the end of the story. The end of the story is what happens after the war. Two possible outcomes. And I entertain these outcomes from Gideon Rockman, the foreign policy columnist for the Financial Times. That's the pink newspaper. It's extremely influential in London and across Europe. And Gideon Rockman is a veteran commenting on European affairs. Two possible outcomes. One, Russia loses. And what do we do with Russia after the defeat, after the disgrace, after the fall of the economy, contracting severely over these next years with no reversal in sight? What do we do with it as a dependent upon Europe, as a source of energy, as a middle power? Note that, a middle power, not a superpower, not a nuclear power, not an energy power, a middle power, part of the European condominium. The second possibility is that Russia wins in Ukraine, and that is a nightmare scenario because it would lead to, says Gideon Rockman, years and years, if not decades, of a European state turning into a rock, an endless round of violence and hatred and resistance. Mary, a very good evening to you. Your measure of these two possibilities, the first, the benign one, if you can call it that, Russia loses. Is Europe in a position to rehabilitate Russia as a middle power? Does that make sense, Mary? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. Well, before I answer that question, I think it's important to say that there are other possible outcomes here that I think the Financial Times esteemed columnist doesn't consider, which is a potential breakup of Russia, should Putin be pushed aside, or if we see internal chaos there in the Kremlin. You could see, of course, protracted warfare. You could see Russia absorbed as a kind of client state of China. You could also see Putin pushed aside or killed or die of natural causes, and to see a renewed, even more aggressive figure who takes a pause to try to lure the Europeans into a peace pact and then renews the aggression in the near to medium term. I think this is a pivotal year. We've now tested what the Ukrainian army is capable of doing if they're given the capabilities to fight. And we've seen the denigration of Russian forces and their reliance on other powers that are positioning themselves in direct counter to the Western alliance, namely China and Iran, who are sending all manner of help, be it money or drones or basic goods to replace the trade that has been lost with Europe. So it's a very complex situation. I think it's a little bit more complicated than the Financial Times laid out. One more note, by the way, on that column, which is called, quote, "There's no path to lasting Russian victory," which I would commend to everybody. The columnist asserts that Russia, for the first time, doesn't have any allies in the West. Well, that's not quite true. There's the Serb population that they have. There are pro-Russian elements and parts of Central Asia that have moved or looked toward the West. You have an Israel that has kind of positioned itself in the middle, which is certainly viewed from this vantage point as an ally of the West. So it'll be a pivotal year, and I don't think anybody can say with confidence which way it's going to go.
And the Europeans, Mary, the end of Ostpolitik is not obvious. It's not even clear cut. Do the Europeans anticipate going back to Russia as a customer for its energy resources? And is that imaginable under the way the Kremlin is now conducting itself, which is a surveillance and state of brutality? Do the Europeans make demands on the Kremlin before and if there's business again?
I think that's hard to do, John, largely because of the way that energy contracts are structured, particularly things like natural gas. Some of these arrangements that the Europeans have struck with places like Qatar are long-term contracts. These are very expensive things to produce. They have a long lead time, and it would be hard to change that. I think it's also become clear that renewable energy cannot satisfy the vast bulk of what Europe needs to power its homes and its businesses. I think the only scenario in which the Europeans go whole hog back to Russia for energy is a scenario where you see not just the fall of Putin, but of Putinism. And I find that unlikely. It's possible, but I find it unlikely.
Then we come to, let's frame this in terms of Davos and the year ahead. We've got a pronounced, anticipated, predicted recession. We have worldwide inflation that is not as severe as it was, but certainly not close to a target. We have doubts about the supply chain because of the profound disruption in China, which we no longer trust. It's contracting, it's depopulating, it's in generally alienating its neighborhood. We have all that on Davos's plate, and then we have Russia. Are these separate silos, Mary? Do they say, well, Russia, another day, let's deal with the immediate prosperity or lack of prosperity? Or is solving Russia the way it is a one piece that must be taken into account if we're to solve what was remaining of globalization?
Well, the irony is, of course, that the continental European nations, plus the United Kingdom, always had it within their power to be prosperous and innovative economies, and they've really constrained themselves by their own policies. Now, layer on top of that the very risky decision to rely so heavily on one energy provider, namely Russia, and you get the situation that they're in today. I think, unfortunately, true to form, the Europeans are not taking this as an opportunity, given the public shock at what has just happened, as an opportunity to really push through significant supply-side reforms, namely liberating their entrepreneurs and their job creators and trying to attract investment from different parts of the world. They're not doing that. And so it looks like while places like Germany have done a pretty good job, the recession is not, I think, as severe as many had feared. It's still very, very painful, and it's going to hurt the poorest in the society the most, because those are the people who have to still drive to their jobs, where things like food and energy are higher proportions of their overall spending. I think one of the dangers here, John, is that in the turn away from Russia, not just from the energy market, but also from the consumer market, is that European countries will try to gravitate closer to communist China. And you already see that happening. You saw delegations from Germany trundling over there late last year. Macron is mooted to go. And you see the United States, the current administration, making overtures. Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, is going to meet with Liu He in the coming days to kind of make nice. John Kerry, the climate czar, has tried very hard to restart talks. And so in turning away from Russia, the Europeans and to a degree in the United States are missing the lesson here, which is that when you get regimes that are revanchist, that want to expand their borders, that are not content to be status quo powers, that want to take over and want to dominate their near, abroad, and beyond, you can't feed those regimes with trade and with goodwill because they don't share that goodwill. It's not enough for us to want them to reform. They have to do that too. And my fear is that we'll find ourselves in a situation here, regardless of how the Russia war in Ukraine turns out, where we're going to continue to be tied very tightly to China. And then one day we're going to wake up and say, oh, wait a second. They're attacking Taiwan, or they're doing something against our interests that we can't tolerate. Now, what are we going to do? Our corporates are pulling out of China, but we have, significant strategic industries that are tied there. And man, that's going to put us even in an even worse place than Europe finds itself today, pulling out of Russia.
We entertain the other part of the possible future in Mr. Rockman's column, which is that Russia wins. Russia wins, dominating Ukraine, a puppet government, many dystopian possibilities in Ukraine, but what it would do to European sense of security, prosperity, and dealing with a victorious Vladimir Putin. I entertain it only because it's not impossible, and we're told again and again that Russia is preparing a major offensive sometime in these next months. We're even seeing speculation routine now about Russia unsheathing the nuclear sword. They're always boasting about their new nuclear weapons. One, most recently, an undersea nuclear weapon. It's quite fantastic. It's as if we've wandered into a science fiction novel. But there it is. It's in Gideon Rockman's column. A Russia that is victorious in Ukraine. Does this darken Europe, Mary? Do we then find ourselves in a time machine and it's 1948 all over again?
Oh, I think so, yes. I mean, the only time that the Europeans ever really get serious about their own security is when they themselves are physically threatened. And if Russia did manage to push its border to Lviv and the western side of Ukraine that borders Poland and other Eastern European countries, then the fear, of course, becomes, well, heck, what's next? Are they going to go for Moldova? Could they make trouble in the Baltics? I think you would see real pressure on nations like Turkey to greenlight Finland and Sweden getting into NATO, which hasn't happened yet. And you may see national leaders get serious about spending more money on their own defense. I mean, there's a wonderful, wonderful newsletter out of London called Euro Intelligence that noted today, to give credit where credit is due, that German Chancellor Olaf Scholz was the guy who vetoed a rise in defense spending before this war, and that the current president of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, allowed that defense capability to decay. And so, you have generations now of major European powers that just have not taken their own defense very seriously. They'll make great speeches about it, but when push comes to shove, most of the German tanks recently in a demonstration failed. They don't even work. So, it would push Europe back, I think, into the arms of the United States. And that's unfortunate that it would take that kind of scenario to do it. But I fear that that's what would be necessary in order to tie us closer together in a serious and sustained way.
The foreign minister of the United Kingdom, Mr. Cleverly, visiting in the United States, making remarks that Washington must go further and faster, is the quote, with arms for Ukraine. There is a general argument, Mary, in Europe that NATO is led by the U.S. and the U.S. has hesitated since the beginning of hostilities last winter to give Ukraine the tools to win. Do you share that general opinion? Mr. Cleverly is certainly restating it now. And is the Biden administration in a place where it can do more quickly?
Well, the answer is yes. Of course it is. The United States doesn't have unlimited capabilities, but we are the strongest nation in the world, particularly when it comes to certain types of systems, not hypersonic missiles, which is unfortunate, which Putin has, which is a great concern. But when it comes to things like intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance, we're the reason why Ukraine has been so effective, because they know where to shoot. And we're starting to give them systems that are, precise and allow them to target it. We should be giving them fighter jets. We should be giving them, Patriot missile batteries. We should be, giving them whatever it is they say they need to win and win quickly. I mean, this isn't just about Ukraine versus Russia. I know I've made this point ad nauseum on your show, John. It's about the Western free nations fighting a consortium of Russia, China, and Iran. And this is an opportunity in a fight that is essential to the security of continental Europe, not only to have Ukraine win, but to degrade the Russian forces, which is the flip side of the coin, and to also send a message to other powers like China to say, don't mess with us, because if you mess with us, we're going to respond with overwhelming force, either through our allies or ourselves. And so, look, the Biden administration, they sent signals of weakness with the withdrawal from Afghanistan, with the outreach to Russia, with the outreach to China, with the appeasement of Iran. And they are now dealing with the consequences of that. And one just hopes that these lessons are being learned quickly, because as I said at the beginning, 2023, I think, is going to be a pivotal year in that conflict, and therefore a pivotal year, not just for Ukraine, but for the nations of Europe and for the United States.
Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, former Senior Advisor to the Secretary of State, traveling. When we come back, I'm going to ask Mary about a new player on the field who's an old player, Japan. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.